everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Southern Onion Podcast. I'm Erica.
And I'm Erin.
Yay! And we are your hosts for today. And today we're going to be talking about the Jodi Arias, If I Can't Have You documentary on Discovery Plus. So I will go ahead and give a disclaimer for everyone listening and who does not know us. We are not lawyers. We are not in law enforcement. This is just our opinion on things and how we see the trial. And so that's what you're going to be listening to. So if we mess up and we use wrong terms, we're not experts anyway. Right, Erin?
That's right. It is what it is.
That's right. Deal with it. No.
That's right.
So we'll get started. I watched the documentary Friday night. And the first thing that got me is when they started off with some of her journal entries. So evidently Jodi was someone that kept a diary. Now, I have tried to keep a diary before, and it goes good for about 2 days, and then that's it. But evidently, she was very disciplined with that. So, props to her on that. And it was kind of simple. Like, her thoughts, they weren't these real intricate thoughts, for this calculated killer that she has been accused of being. And it did say later on, she had dropped out of school, which... a lot of people don't finish school, and that's okay for different reasons. But I thought it was kind of simple as far as how she articulates things. So I just don't see where a lot of people were coming from about how, oh, she planned this, and I think she just lived in the moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you see, like, her being in middle school and she was talking about typical stuff, about wanting to have her own little city, name it after fruits and vegetables. And it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so cute. Like, that's how we would be at that age. And then, of course, you kind of identify with her a little bit when she was in high school and she was talking about kind of being a loner and not really being able to fit in with the cliques. And it was very hard for her when her family moved. So I found her kind of relatable being younger. And I loved the pictures of her when she was a little girl. I thought that was just, it kind of makes you see her more as a person. Because you hear so much in the media about being this monster. And now we're starting to see more of a human aspect of her. Mm-hmm. And I thought the journals kind of gave you a more in-depth look into Jodi.
Yeah, definitely, because, and like you said, she just seemed more relatable. Other killers, other accused killers, you see it from a mile away. You see it how they treated animals when they were younger, or, they were abusive towards siblings, or, always getting suspended in school, or, something like that. But yeah, like her City of Goodness, I think is what it was called. And, I mean, who... I don't know I've ever wanted a city of goodness. Yeah. It would be nice to have, but I don't know that I've ever, growing up, said, oh, yeah, I'm going to, Banana Boulevard, and, mine would be a cat town, and it'd be all cats. That's what I would want. And granted, we need to point out, too, this documentary really is about her. It's not...
Yeah.
It's not, a news network coming in and trying to give both sides or whatever. It really is about her. And so you meet early on her lawyer, Jennifer Wilmont. And I think I said her name right. And Jennifer, I liked her. For a defense lawyer, not all defense lawyers are, you like. But I liked her. I thought she was there to help. And because wasn't her primary purpose to make sure she didn't get the death penalty?
Right, yes. She was there to keep Jodi from being put to death. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did a good job of what she did, obviously. For those that know the ending of the case, she definitely did that. But I think she also shines a little bit of a light on what Jodi was going through as well. Mm-hmm. that Kirk Nurmi kind of did, but Jennifer did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And also Maria De La Rosa, too, the defense mitigator specialist. Yeah. She as well was telling, you know, again, a different kind of story that we've never heard about Jody before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know all that went into... You had to have lawyers, you had to have a mitigator, like you have to have these things if you're going to have a defense team. And so no wonder people, I mean, can't afford a good defense attorney if you've got to have three in your corner just, you know, by law itself. And I mean, if we're wrong, you know, somebody please feel free to comment and, you know, we're always up for learning new things. But yeah, when she was like, well, you have to have this and you have to have a mitigator, and that was me. And I was like, are you serious? I mean, yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. And, now there was this other, when they talked about her raising and they got into her parents and her upbringing and that, you know, when they moved, it was stressful. Dad evidently was working a lot and he... use the belt. I wrote down the belt, and that once, you know, because she was whipped with the belt, and I said, well, you know, I guess a lot of us are going to, you know, be predisposed to being killers, you know, we're in the South where the belt is used, and I was like, okay, I don't think you can just say because she was disciplined with the belt that that's going to mean, you know, you're going to be a killer now. Somewhere along the way.
And she even said on the stand that she felt betrayed when her dad used the belt on her for the first time. Like she felt very betrayed by that type of discipline. And that was very interesting too, to hear her say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, coming from a kid's point of view, you never want to be disciplined, but you know, there's a fine line in excessive discipline and then, you know, no discipline. Because I think you can look back at other crimes where children were brought up on a pedestal of you can do no wrong, you are everything, you know, my sweet, you know, insert child's name here, can never do wrong. And then they turn out and they're the ones going and doing horrific crimes, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel a bit sorry for Jody. Maybe I shouldn't. But I do. Yeah. I just feel like she caught a bad rap on a lot of things. You know, how much was it because it was female? How much because of where the murder took place? You know, I don't know.
The media played into it. Yeah, the media as well may have played into this.
Yeah.
Because this documentary, there was stuff in this I had never seen and had never heard before. And I've seen other documentaries on Jody. Mm-hmm. And this was one where I walked away going, I just learned some new stuff here. I didn't think there was anything else to learn.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why I was really blown away by it. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, right. And that's why I wanted to see it as well. Because you are way more familiar with the case than I am. What I know of the case is through you, what you've told me.
Right.
We'd be on the phone and you're like, hey, listen what happened when the trial was going on. Listen what happened, what happened in the court today. And I'm like, oh, for goodness sake. But then now that I've seen some of this and I've done a little bit more research on her and the case, I'm like, okay, I have questions big time. As far as how it was conducted, you know, because was the jury sequestered? Or do you know?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that they were, yes.
Okay. Because I don't know that it ever said, and I wasn't sure, because I was like, with that much media attention, you should be sequestered. Right. And I'm sorry, but they should control what TV channels you have access to. Like, when you're sequestered in a trial like that, you should only have the ability to see HGTV and, like, the Disney Channel or something. I don't know, but, you know.
Yeah. Nothing to have anything to do with the news, you know, any of that Entertainment Tonight stuff, none of that, you know. That's where you see this media frenzy. I haven't seen that since, I guess, O.J. Simpson.
Right, yeah. And we were in high school when that was going on, so.
Yeah. So that's where, and I think it what attracted people to this case was, here's this beautiful, I mean, she's a pretty blonde. Mm-hmm. And she was like maybe 110 pounds wet, maybe. And then you got this guy who's 190, 200 pounds. And it's like, how did this happen? And how did this go so wrong? Mm-hmm. So I think that's where it got so much media attention.
Yeah.
And then I think it grew from there. You know, mm-hmm. I think people really started to delve into her past and his past both. Mm-hmm. And try to figure out what caused all this. So that's why I found this documentary interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, and some other things I wrote down about it, and it seemed like very early on, and I'm glad they did kind of show both sides. You know, they interviewed mm-hmm. a lot of his friends, of Travis Alexander's friends, and I mean, it was immediate. Well, when I found out, I got a call at 4 a.m. and he was dead, and we just looked at each other and said, Jody did it. And I was like, how? I'm missing something here. Because we're all weird in a sense. We're all awkward because we're human. We're unique. But it's almost like his friends wanted it to be her. And I get that in the sense of, if something happens to your friend or your family member, horrific, or just any level, you want to be able to blame somebody. Because if you can't, how do you resolve those feelings? You've got to be able to blame somebody. And it's like they just wanted it to be her. Because they act like that he didn't have multiple people in his life that he could have stirred up his own trouble away from Jody.
Right. Well, and I think that Sky and Chris Hughes, they're the main players in this as far as the friendship goes.
Right.
And they are also the ones that let Jody and Travis come over and stay at their homes, because that was kind of meeting in the middle, because Jody lived in Palm Desert, Travis lived in Arizona, so mm-hmm. it was a meeting place at their home. Mm-hmm. And at first, I think everything was cool until Sky and Chris started to see some behavior in Jody that they didn't like mm-hmm. and found alarming. And that's when they pulled Travis aside and said, hey, we're noticing all these things. And then Sky says, I'm afraid we're going to find you chopped up in her freezer.
Right.
So it makes you wonder, like you said, what am I missing here? Because I wrote down, like, they noticed that she would follow him to the bathroom. She would listen at the door at his conversations. Mm-hmm. And then she also broke into his email mm-hmm. and was forwarding messages from girls to her email account to mm-hmm. kind of check on them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that, and I thought, what would provoke somebody to do that? Maybe she felt like he was cheating on her. I don't know.
Well, other than the following him to the bathroom, everything else, I'm pretty sure, especially in today's time, every mm-hmm. high schooler has done this, and most young adults, right? You're right. I mean, never me, but you know, you're like, oh, they left their email up. Scroll. You know, what do they have on here? And so to me, that was just somebody who is jealous. Just, I mean, an unhealthy jealousy. I'm not saying it's right what she did. But I'm sure that's happened in, you know, at least one relationship we've all had where they were just attached to our hip and it was like, whew, stop it. But I don't think anybody has claimed, you know, that, oh, Erica, she's always around, so I bet she's going to chop you up one day. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Well, and you know what I found interesting was when they talked to Travis, he was baffled by this. He was mm-hmm. like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So I find that interesting that you're dating somebody and I guess you're so in love. Because they said that they both thought the other one was, like, the one. This is the person I'm going to marry, I'm going to have kids with. Yeah. So I know sometimes you don't see things, but he, mm-hmm. I think that kind of made him stop and go, okay, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. But that didn't cause him to break up with her.
Right, exactly. That it wasn't concerning to him. And I would hope that if somebody said, hey, you know, that person you're dating, I think they're going to chop you up, I would like to think, okay, I need my exit plan then, because if you're a trusted friend, why are you telling me this if you don't honestly believe it?
Right, yeah. And that's a bold statement to make. And then I would be like, well, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think Travis believed him. I don't think Travis believed him. I don't think he bought into that.
Yeah.
I don't think he did.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think he did either. So let's go ahead and take a brief break real quick. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the trial. And also, I have some thoughts about his roommates. So let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back. Welcome back. All right. So when we left off, I said I had a few things to say about the roommates. And I'm so disappointed in them. I would like to think if I lived with somebody, even though they mention it's a 3,700 square foot house, that if I wasn't seen for a day and there's this smell coming from my room, that they would at least knock on the door and be like, "Hey, are you okay? You need some Imodium? What's going on in here?" You know, and I feel so bad for him in that sense, you know, because it had been, what, 2 days? Was it 2 days or 1 day or too long? Anyway.
It was five days.
Oh.
It was 5 days, yes.
Oh,
and they blamed the smell, which maybe Mad was on his dog, Napoleon. Why would you blame it on the dog?
Exactly. That poor dog.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it was 5 days until they discovered him.
I totally missed that point, so
yeah.
Apologies. Yes. But okay, so you live with somebody for 5 days. Are you all really that busy that you don't... It reminds me of an episode of The Golden Girls. Yes, I'm talking about The Golden Girls, where Rose moves in with two flight attendants, and they're just all over the place, and, you know, Rose is the only one home. I'd get that, but I don't, you know... They weren't flight attendants. But, so anyway,
exactly.
We can talk more about them later, but I'm disappointed in them.
Yep.
So, let's talk a little bit about the relationships Jody had before Travis. So, I know there was one in high school before she dropped out, I guess. His name was Bobby. And they talked about them kind of living in, was it like a, they lived in a trailer, but he wasn't, as most young people are not, you know, sold on keeping their house in tip-top shape and clean. You know, I'm still not sold on that, but, you know, but that Jody kind of became the caretaker, if you will, of Bobby, and worked at Denny's, I think, to...
Right.
You know, in the food industry, that's hard work. That's not a joke, you know. And she's doing this because, is that why she dropped out of high school? Because of that relationship and her trying to make ends meet?
Well, she had, her relationship with her parents became really rocky. And so after she dropped out, she moved in with Bobby. They had no electricity, no running water. And then, like you said, she worked at Denny's, and that was for about a year. And she even journaled that she was turning into somebody she didn't want to be during that time. So, yeah, it was a really bad situation because Bobby ended up cheating on her. She found out Bobby was cheating on her. And that's why I think Jody got out of that and went to Big Sur.
Because when she found out, that's when she was like, okay, I've put myself in a situation where I can't get out of this. And she knew she wanted out of it. Like, she knew Bobby wasn't the one. And, you know, the place she was in wasn't good. And she wanted out, but just couldn't. So, to me, that says, you know, this is the first one that cheats on her. So, why didn't she get mad at him? You know, why didn't...
Right.
Was there no record of any... assaults on each other, you know, not because those are so underreported anyway, especially on women, because, you know, people don't want to believe it. In the majority, it's so hard to prove. But I wonder if that set the tone for her expectations of relationships. You know, they're going to, you know, who I'm going to date with is going to disappoint me. They're going to cheat on me. They're not going to be everything I want, but are they enough to make me happy, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I wonder why that led her in to the next relationship, the Daryl Brewer. Because he was quite a bit older, wasn't he?
Yes, he was in his 40s.
And she was like early 20s.
Yeah, and he had been married before, and he had a child. And he told Jody, he said, you know, I don't want to get married. I don't want to have any more children. Mm-hmm. So, but she still stayed in a relationship with him. And they actually bought a home together. And they said that she was very good to his son. She was good to his family. So there again, no indication of anything. Mm-hmm. The family said she was a sweet, kind person and was good to the little boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that would be somebody that would raise alarms to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I always appreciate or respect people who take other people's children, you know, as their own, because, you know, they don't have to, but they do, and they show that care and compassion, and, you know, and that's really good. So if somebody, you know, if she's this horrid person, then why would she even get in a relationship where a child is involved? I would think that would be a distraction or more work than it's worth to be in a relationship, you know. Right. That's the part I don't get, you know. And then I just have to talk about it, and then we'll get to when her and Travis met.
Yeah.
There was a part where I guess it was during her relationship with Bobby that Jody discovered the Mary Jane, the sweet smelling smoke of green cannabis, is I believe how it was quoted. And I'm sorry, but all sweet cannabis that I have smelled, it all smelled like skunk to me. I don't get it. She could be part of that 1 or 3%, whatever it is, that thinks skunks smell good, because that is a thing. I do know that. But yeah, she was like, the sweet smell of the cannabis. And I was like, that's an interesting way to put that. Instead of just saying, I smoke pot, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, if my parents are listening, I do not smoke pot at all. Never. Just wanted to put that out there.
Just got to put that out there. Yeah.
Notice how Aaron didn't deny it. Just saying. So,
I'm not noticing. Yeah.
Aaron's like, move on.
No.
So again, here with the second relationship, Daniel Brewer, here's somebody who can give her a comfortable life, who has a child from a previous relationship, marriage, but it's not able to give her own child. So all these boxes, if you will, are marked off of things that she wants, but she knows he can't give her everything still. So it's like, you give me what I need, but is it enough to make me stay, you know, or to be content? Will I give up other things, you know, to stay with you? So then it goes into, okay, Las Vegas. And she is at a convention for prepaid lawyers, right? Prepaid legal. Okay, I'm telling you.
Yeah, PPL. Yeah, you're good.
Okay, so PPL. So this is where it's a company, you pay a membership fee, and you get access to quote-unquote top-notch lawyers throughout the country, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how often are you getting sued that you need to buy a membership to prepaid lawyers or legal, excuse me, prepaid legal. So that was my first question. And how much is this membership? But this is the night that she meets Travis Alexander. I mean, to me, there's a huge hole missing. How does she get there? Like, why is she there? Is she's going to start selling it or be a marketer of this?
Right. So she was there at the convention to get like training for PPL because she was wanting to make more money because she was working at a resort in Big Sur, but she wasn't making the money that they kind of needed to be able to sustain the lifestyle they wanted, her and Daryl. And so she ended up getting recruited to do PPL, and that's where she ended up in Vegas in September of 2006.
Okay.
Where she met Travis Alexander, yes.
Okay. So, yes. And evidently, these are like, from what they said, these are huge events, like 10, 15,000 people, and I had never heard of it, but, you know, I'm not in court every other week either, so, but yeah, I was just like, okay, so out of all these, let's say there's 10,000 people there, they meet at the same table or however they meet, and evidently it was an instant attraction.
Right.
They were up till 4 a.m. talking, and, you know, I guess all the butterflies and fireworks and all that good stuff was going off when they meet each other. But it never...
Well, I think what did it was the pinstrip suit.
Yeah. God. Right. So there's all these pictures they show. Right. And it's just him in that pinstripe suit. It's like, are those, they only took pictures of him, you know, for one night? Was that his only, you know, was he a struggling, you know, new up and comer marketer and that was his only suit? I mean, what? What is this?
I don't know. They all were wearing on that night to that dinner, and I was just like, it looked like Zoot Suit Riot. That's all I could think about is that song, Zoot Suit Riot.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I saw the pinstripe suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I thought the same thing, but, you know, that's the twin connection there. But yeah, I did too. I was like, okay, what is it with the pinstripe suits? Because this wasn't that long ago. You know, it's not like this was the 80s and we're missing, you know, oh, during that time, pinstripe suits meant this. Or, you know, they were a show of stature or whatever. I don't know. But, but yeah, it was, God.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I was just like, okay, these are the only pictures we have of them. Yep. But there's this instant attraction. They're talking all night and they, you know, present Travis as kind of a flirt, the, kind of the jokester, if you will, the one everybody's just naturally drawn to, in at events, right. You know, and it showed him giving a little bit of a presentation and he's making these jokes and people are laughing. So you could tell he's comfortable in front of people. You know, which you better be in that kind of business. But I just wonder, you know, what changed from this jovial guy to this, you know, pretty blonde girl? What happened in that relationship that things turned so bad?
You know? Right, yeah, that turned so dark, yeah.
Yeah, and it seemed like it did rather quickly.
Yeah.
Because they... How long were they together before they broke up, like technically broke up? It wasn't that long, was it?
It was about, they dated officially, if that's what you want to call it, for about 8 months.
Yeah. I mean, that's
and
nothing.
Yeah. And Jody said it was amicable. There was, they both just decided, hey, let's part ways. And it seemed fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. It seemed okay. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden you're hearing, oh, well, these text messages, and obviously we're not going to get it into this episode, but these text messages are atrocious, to say the least, and it's interesting, and it opens up a huge, huge debate on, you know, the way some men and women talk to their partners, and how it's psychological abuse. It's emotional abuse. And, you know, did he hit her? I don't think so. I don't think it was like a physically abusive relationship, but according to these texts, it's quite the psychological and emotional abuse given. And, you know, she seems to be a people pleaser and wants to do well and wants people to like her. So, you know, of course, if you get talked to that way, that's the person you're going to work on and try to make them like you even more because, oh my God, everybody has to like me.
Right, right. And I think that was her ultimate downfall, was being a people pleaser, wanting to, it seemed like she just, even though Travis would say awful things, like you said, we can't get it in this episode, but he would say awful things, but she just kept going back. And I couldn't understand that. Mm-hmm. Why did, if somebody's talking to you that way, why do you keep coming back into that? So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get more into the psychology of that.
Yes.
You know, of that, of the abused situation and why people keep going back to it. Because when you're not in that relationship and you're not the one being abused, it's so easy to be like, just walk away. What's wrong? You know, but when you're in it, it's a totally different reality than what you think they should see. Definitely.
Right.
So, all right. So we're going to pause there for today. So first episode, well done, Erin. Yay.
Yay.
You did great. See? So we've got plenty more to talk about. So again, this is the Jodi Arias Discovery Plus documentary called If I Can't Have You. So if you can, go out to Discovery Plus and watch it. We'd like to hear your thoughts on it. You can follow us on Instagram at Southern Onion Podcast. And you can also send us an email at southernonion2@gmail.com. And if you have any questions, comments, any ideas that you want us to cover, we'll be glad to read those and get back with you. So, Erin, well done.
Yes, well done.
Always nice to talk to you.
Oh, yes. Yep. Always a pleasure.
All right. So, until next time, keep peeling back those layers of true crime. Take care. Stay safe. And we'll be talking to you soon. See ya, Erin.
All right. Bye. Thank you.